Last case, well, Lucas appears again. United States versus Lucas. Mr. Maximovich, presumably a different Lucas. Mr. Maximovich, ready?
May it please the court, I'm John Maximovich, and I'm representing the appellant Renee Lucas. Ms. Lucas was convicted of conspiracy to commit identity theft in violation of Title 18 United States Code 371, and also obstruction of correspondence, Title 18 United States Code, Section 1702.
Mr. Maximovich, I'd just like to ask you something right off the bat, and that is, how was Ms. Lucas prejudiced? In other words, was her sentence more severe than it would have been if the court had accepted the plea? I mean, how could she have ever done better than 2 years of probation, 6 months of home confinement, even if the court had accepted the plea? I looked at, you know, what she's, you know, done here, and
yes,
wow, was she lucky. She is one lucky woman.
Yes, Your Honor. In terms of sentence, she probably would suffer no disadvantage by going to trial and being convicted of two counts. But by being forced to go to trial, she picked up an additional conviction, and that is prejudicial to her. Instead of...
How so?
Well, for purposes of career offender status at some point in time,
for her future crimes.
For future crimes, Your Honor, even for the criminal history category, it all prejudices her if she has further criminal problems.
You go back and tell her that one judge on this panel said she's the luckiest woman she has seen in a long, long time.
I certainly will, Your Honor. She tried to plead guilty. The judge did not accept her guilty plea because, in the judge's opinion, she did not establish that she...
I think he was quite right. She was evasive. And, of course, the problem is, if you're evasive in the guilty plea hearing, it sets the stage for you to argue later, oh, well, you know, I didn't understand, I didn't admit anything, I'm not guilty, and so on.
Yes,
you have to be forthright.
Yes, you do have to be forthright.
And she wasn't.
You do have to be forthright. You also have to be cautious as a defendant. Some of your comments or remarks could be interpreted in such a fashion by the judge that when sentencing comes around, you could be picking up an obstruction of justice enhancement.
But that didn't happen here. See, none of that happened here.
No.
She made out like a real bandit.
Well, in terms of sentencing, she got probation and home detention, and that, compared to other defendants that I've represented, that is making out like a bandit.
So why did she want a trial?
She didn't want a trial. She just wanted to enter the plea.
You know, but if you get your plea set aside, you have, you know, you're back to square one.
Well, basically what we're asking the court to do would be vacate the two jury verdicts of guilty, remand it to the court, and order the district court to allow her to plead guilty.
And by now, he may have thought about all of this. You know, she could very well go back and go to jail. She really could.
Well, I imagine that is a possibility. I'm sure that is a possibility. However, if the judge was going to give her an increased sentence, He'd have to have just
reasons. Wait a second. Was she sentenced originally under the guidelines or under Booker?
It was, it's under Booker, but basically pursuant to the guidelines, the judge, although they're advisory, I believe.
When the judge sentenced her, did he think he was bound by the guidelines, or was he treating them as simply advisory, as under Booker?
I believe he was treating them advisory as under Booker.
Gosh.
What? When did he sentence her?
Let's see here.
January 26, 2005.
Well, so when was Booker decided? Was that in the spring that was the fall of 2004, was it?
Yeah.
Did the judge refer to Booker? Did he?
Your Honor, I don't believe he referred to Booker, but I think that the sentencing was after Booker. I could be mistaken.
Because you realize if a judge sentences thinking the guidelines are mandatory, and then the resentences after Booker, he can go up or down as he wants, you know, just so it's reasonable.
That's
a big risk. We've reminded criminal defendants in our decisions, it's a big risk when you want to be resentenced under Booker when you were previously sentenced under the mandatory guideline regime.
It is a big risk. It's could go up as easily as down.
How many strikes does she have?
This was her first problem with the law.
So this
was her first set of convictions. It seemed, and I won't disagree. Some of the colloquy between her and the judge could be interpreted as she's being less than forthright. It also can be interpreted as she was being extremely cautious, and I was advising her to be extremely cautious, to be very careful how she phrased some of her testimony, because she very well, at the time of sentencing, could pick up an extra two levels. And she was a borderline case, and it could have made a difference between jail time and no jail time. Your Honor, she also has health problems, and her home detention has been terminated. So there's no more home detention. The probation part still exists.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Maximovich.
You're welcome, Your Honor.
Ms. Houston?
May it please the Court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Toy Houston. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney from the Northern District of Indiana. It's our position that the Court didn't abuse its discretion.
Was she sentenced under the mandatory guidelines regime or the advisory regime?
The Supreme Court decision, I believe, issued January 14th, and this case was continued awaiting that Supreme Court decision. Because her trial ended September 10th, 2004. So because of the state of flux with Booker and fanfare and everything that was going on between the Seventh Circuit and the Supreme Court and all the circuits, what occurred is that the parties agreed in our district that some of these cases should await the ruling of the Supreme Court decision. So the judge in this case did use it as an advisory.
So he had the benefit of Booker.
He had the benefit and made this decision. Counsel says that the defendant could be interpreted as less than forthright. Well, the bottom line is the district court makes that determination, and this district court determined that she wasn't being forthright and correctly gave an articulated, sound discretion on why he refused to accept her plea. There are three times during the course of this colloquy between the defendant and the court where the court stops her. And at one point, the judge, going to what Judge Posner said, literally said, counsel, again, I'm not going to be pulling teeth. If I can't have a factual statement made, I'm not going to sit here and pull teeth. I don't want her to later come back and say that I was trying to force somebody to do something.
But you know what I did find interesting? Sure I understood, you know, Judge Lozano's concern that she was equivocating about what she knew at the moment she accepted the package, but then she seems to have quite clearly indicated that once she saw the recipient, she knew something was wrong, but she, you know, delivers the package to Myricks across the street anyway, knowing that Myricks is going to sell the stuff because she's going to sell it to her, right, to Lucas. Why isn't that enough to meet the intent element?
I think in this case, because early on the court had to stop her and say what I just read to you, what Judge Lozano said, that occurred at the beginning. The change of plea hadn't even been 10 minutes going when Judge Lozano stopped her. Then he gave Mr. Maksymovich an opportunity to talk to his client and again said, I have to stop this. I'm still concerned about it. And I guess my bottom line is that what it comes down to is he didn't find her credible. He didn't feel that she made that essential element. And if the court looks to the trial transcript, she told the exact same story to a jury of 12 that she told to Judge Lozano, and they didn't find her credible either. I mean, that's the bottom line.
But wait a minute. If there wasn't enough to convict her based on what she said at the change of plea, and it's exactly the same, you know, why was there enough for a jury to convict
her? No. She was supposed to be telling the district court judge what she did where he would say, you've committed this crime. She wasn't admitting to what she did, and that's what he made a determination. You're not admitting to that willful element, that essential element. She got up and did the same thing at trial. Well, I really didn't know. I'm assuming I innocently took the package. Those are the comments she used not only during the change of plea but also during the trial. The judge didn't believe her when it came to meeting that essential element of willfulness, and the jury didn't believe her story either, that she didn't know what was going on. She wanted to say, I'm guilty, but then say, well, I'm not really guilty. And the other essential thing here is that if the court had allowed, if it had kept going and the court said, well, okay, I'm going to have your client sit down and have the government give its pross version of what occurred, the court didn't even get to that. He just felt after three attempts with her trying to make a factual basis that he didn't even ask the government, and I was the attorney of record, he didn't even ask me to give a factual basis. So if that factual basis had been there and she still wanted to kind of equivocate on whether or not she was guilty but acknowledged that the government's version was acceptable, then we wouldn't be here. The judge could have accepted her plea. But we didn't even get to that point because the judge said three times that's enough, we're going to trial. She's not meeting. He even gave the parties an opportunity to brief it, even though at the time I even told the judge, I said, Your Honor, you really are the arbiter of this, but if you want us to write these memorandum, we will. So he heard her testimony. He judged her credibility at the change of plea. Even after the filing of the pleadings that he ordered us to file, he still said no, because now not only did he have her before him to say, I don't believe you, he had an opportunity to review the same transcript that Mr. Maksymovich and I reviewed and still did not find her find that she had made met that essential element of willfulness, and therefore he articulated a sound reason and didn't abuse his discretion.
But what I was trying, my point was, if she didn't meet the essential element of willfulness, she should have been found not guilty.
No, she didn't meet the essential element of willfulness in telling her story and her admission. The government proved at trial that she was willful. We established that element at trial. She just wouldn't admit it. It's apples and oranges. It's her admissions versus what the government has to prove.
Thank you, Ms. Houston. Mr. Maksymovich, does he have any time? 2 minutes? Do you have anything further?
You know, first, Your Honor, I would just like to point out that it at the end of the plea hearing, when the judge rejected the plea, Ms. Houston wrote a brief, as I wrote a brief, supporting the plea. the plea. At that point in time for Ms. Houston, the defendant here supplied all the facts and all the predicates that were necessary for the guilty plea. Her opinion somewhere in between.
I'm confused now. Get back to a point that Judge Rovner said. So look, what you want is to that the jury trial should be wiped out and her plea should be reinstated?
And she should get the right to plead guilty to obstruction?
And answer my question. Do you want that original guilty plea to be reinstated?
Yes.
But then she would be sentenced. So what's the difference? She's not going to get a lighter sentence.
She's going to avoid one conviction. She's going to avoid the conviction for the conspiracy.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay, so that's what she's worried about. For that, you may take an appeal. Oh, great.
That's the prejudice, as I see it. I think the district court judge went a bit beyond.
Yeah, it seems so crazy, though, because there's a risk. Maybe it's a small risk that he give her a heavier sentence. It's a small risk. But when you balance that against the really speculative benefit of getting one conviction vacated because you might want to commit further crimes in the future, why is this a sensible appeal?
Your Honor, I agree.
Does she understand the trade-offs? Does she understand there's a risk of a heavier sentence if she's resentenced?
She understands the trade-off.
I don't understand what sense it makes as a judgment. I mean, usually she's been sentenced once. To go back and be sentenced again, well, that's rolling the dice. All to get rid of a conviction that didn't affect her sentence but might affect her future sentences.
Yeah.
Well, maybe she's planning a long career in crime in which every previous conviction would count as...
She may not be planning it, but you never know what...
Never know, right? Might decide it's the best thing you can do after all.
Very regrettably.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Mitchell. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes, Your Honor.
So we thank you for your services.
You are terrific. She is one lucky woman.
Okay, so court will stand in recess until Monday.